And this is the Made of Clay Report, and digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives, where we hear from local residents about the lives they've lived and the lives that they hope to continue living, and the things that they value. And our guest this morning on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Mary Lehrer. Mary, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good. It's really good to have you here. And I've heard about you for years in the community, and we've known some of the same people, but we've never met. So
no.
Just a few minutes ago in the doorway, we meet. So this is how the show happens, you know. In a thumbnail sketch, you know, who are you?
Who am I?
Or just tell me a little bit about yourself. So that's the starting point.
The starting point. Okay. Yeah. I am 55 years old, grew up in a Catholic family with lots of brothers and sisters. I've lived in Ithaca for many, many years, and I treasure Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
I've been an activist for peace and justice pretty much my whole adult life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And love poetry and beauty, and have been a farmer, and... yeah, an aspiring artist.
Aspiring artist.
Yeah.
That's what you keep striving for.
Yeah.
To be able to feel confident that you can call it art. Is that what am I?
I think it's important for me and for most people to have a creative outlet.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
I wasn't given the gift of music, of learning music when I was young, but mm-hmm, something about the arts always makes me happy. So anybody that's an artist, I just love.
Right, and just from what I've known about you, I would say that you've made your life a creative outlet. And
mm-hmm,
that, I mean, and in a certain sense, that's what I'm encouraging us to think about,
uh-huh,
by being on the show, is that how are we creative? And when we're creative, we're generally available to each other in ways that we aren't when we're kind of in a box.
Yeah.
You picked as your first song "Doorway of Changes" by Aerovino,
yes,
local artist. Do
yes.
you want to say anything about that before we listen to it, or after?
No, I'll let it speak for itself.
And so we're going to go to the song.
Traveling across the mountains. think I could go wild. The first time I saw you was in the doorway of change. As you were going through yours, I was going through mine.
And that was Ero Vino, a local musician with the Doorway of Changes. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Mary Lehrer. Mary, tell me about that song.
That song is by my friend Ero Vino, and I love all her music. It was hard to pick. I ended up picking some of the songs based on my heart, not my head. Mm-hmm. I could have picked a lot of songs out of my head, but
I
decided not to. And so there's going to be a lot of them I can't even say.
It's just
something about the way the words and the music come together that, mm-hmm. and the image.
In the doorway.
Doorway of Changes.
Yeah,
and
you see people. The first time that my son laughed as an infant,
uh-huh.
was I was carrying him across the space where there was a slightly open door, and he saw the moving picture inside, and we came back and he saw a different thing, and he thought that seeing those changes was very funny, and he laughed spontaneously.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that was the first time I knew that he had a sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
But
cool.
So
yeah.
The doorway of changes, yeah. It's the threshold that we cross over.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's just kind of go because you are an activist and you take life very seriously, but you also have a sense of humor. What major experience has really helped to define what's meaningful to you or how you live? How have you come to be the person you are? What has shaped you that way?
I would say that there are two.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was about 25 years ago. I had fallen in with a group of activists, Catholic left activists,
mm-hmm.
and had been doing that kind of work. And the Seneca Army Depot was up in Seneca County, and there was a big presence up there. They had, even though they would neither confirm nor deny, they had cruise missiles there, and
mm-hmm.
so we had a presence. And I was arrested there many times and then went to trial. In Rochester, and it was the moment when I walked into the jail cell that had a profound impact on me, and all that I had learned that was in my head about injustice, about racism, went from my head to my heart in that split second. As I saw, there was a jail cell with 10 women, and nine of them were women of color, African-American women, and I was the only white woman. And all that head learning moved to my heart, and I just understood in a split second the powers in this country and what mm-hmm. they're doing.
And so you say that it went from your head to your heart, so that is about power as opposed to an understanding. And what did you realize about power?
I realized that our government is doing this to people and that I didn't want that to be happening, and that I think that solidified my commitment at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want any part of a government that was doing that, and I wanted to put the weight of my life against that as
mm-hmm.
best I could.
Mm-hmm.
In the long term, which is a longer conversation, but
right, no, and we will kind of come into that longer conversation. But one of the things that I want to highlight is that that's the first lesson. I'm assuming there's going to be another one coming up. But one of the things that I notice in that is when we become aware of the institutional structures of the world around us, we can no longer we can no longer avoid experiencing the profound conflict that is our lives. Conflict where there are people that are damaged for good or bad reasons because of things that ought not happen or maybe couldn't happen or maybe they are inevitable, but we don't know. But we have to live in the presence of intense conflict. And it seems like that's when you made the choice to be there, was when you walked into that cell.
And continued to make that choice.
Yeah, yeah. And for many of us, we and there are two things that fall from that realization. One is you can never go back to a naive sense of peace. Mm-hmm. And you can never assume that we will ever have a naive sense of peace. It's always conflict and it's always vigilance. And that's a powerful lesson. Because a lot of people who are activists early on think they can fix the problems.
Right.
But when you've done it for 30 years or 25 years now, you can't. Mm-hmm. You still work on them. What was the, and I'm sorry, I'm preaching a sermon here, and that's not necessarily my role. what was the other experience?
The other experience that had a huge influence on my life was just 2 years ago when I had a total hip replacement. So, also about my leg is related to that because I had been a very active person for all my life.
And you're young to have
I'm
a total
young.
Hip replacement.
I'm young, and it's slowly. I slowly started losing my mobility, and I did not want it, but I eventually gave in to the fact and the idea that I would need surgery. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably true for most people, but it hadn't yet happened to me. I had to look death right in the eye. I mean, it was very unlikely that I would die under surgery, but I could have, and I know someone who died in surgery. So mm-hmm. I basically just had to face that, and I think my life is shaped by that.
What was it in death that you had to face?
What have I done with my life? You know, there were some questions about, you know, where would I go and stuff like that, which actually, honestly, right now I can't remember. But
right.
But more about, wow, yes, I'm mortal. And yes, I mean, we all know that, but it's hard to wrap your mind around it or your life around it.
And it makes you kind of, it forces you to choose to make the memories you want to remember if you haven't already.
Right. And reconcile the relationships that you want to reconcile, for sure. Mm-hmm. And express love to people that you want to, all those things.
It loosens you up.
Yeah.
Opens you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was not too long ago, so this is still pretty new for you.
Yeah.
And so how is both the hip and the heart working?
The hip is working great. I have actually subsequently had a bad knee, so my mobility actually has not really gotten tons better. But it may be getting better right now. But the heart is good. It's good. And I've been on a long journey, spiritual journey my whole life, but in the last 15 years around Buddhism, and that certainly also likes to look death square in the face, in order that we be present in the present moment that we're in.
Absolutely. This is a transition moment. Okay. Is there a music that you would like to go to? We'll come back to your spiritual journey later, but is there a music that you'd like to go to now?
Maybe the Dixie Chicks, Top of the World.
Okie doke.
I wished I was stronger. I wished I loved Jesus the way my wife does. I wished it had been easier instead of any longer. I wished I could have stood where you would have been proud. That won't happen now. That won't happen now. There's a whole lot of singing. It's never gonna be heard. Disappearing every day without so much as a word. Some help. Think I broke the wings off that little songbird. She's never gonna fly to the top of the world right now.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is your Ithaca Community Radio at 88.1 FM in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And you're listening to the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that shape our lives. And our guest on this hour is Mary Lehrer. And Mary, that was that song selection. Do you want to say something about that?
That song, to me, excuse me, is... I don't know. It's very sad and poignant, and it paints a picture of loneliness. And I've played it many times when I needed to have a good cry.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think the main character is quite alienated in his life, and it's also beautiful, just the way they phrase the music.
Right. What about working on issues takes you to that low place?
Well, the enormity of it all certainly can take you there in a heartbeat. The enormity of what we're up against.
And how do you kind of live through those low times?
I need other people. And so I am surrounded by other people. I have strong community, part of the Ithaca Catholic Worker. I need other people who are looking at the same issues and working on them in order to feel like we're in it together.
Right. And one of the things that I have been in my work outside of this volunteer stint as a radio host has been noting that people need 30 to 70 people in their lives. Some of them are there daily, some of them are there only once every few years. They're the people that help you take stock of where you've been and where you're going, but are really important even if you only see them every 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. or talk with them every 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. But then there's lots of people in between. And we don't think about having a village or a clan of that size, but I think it's what I've seen is the people who are resilient through the hard times have a support system that's about that size. And that's not all that different from the Ithaca Catholic worker community in terms of size.
But yeah.
People, our communities cut across all sorts of affiliations, and people feel varying degrees of closeness, and we don't always understand how that works.
Yeah, plus I have a big family, so.
Right. How, yes. Yeah. And so you were, what, 8 or 9?
There's eight children total.
Yeah, eight children, and you moved here when you were?
When I was 10, right, we moved here.
Yeah,
so I have a lot of nieces and nephews that I'm still forming relationships mm-hmm. with.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's really interesting about your family, just as a sidebar, like many people coming out of the Arab oil embargo in 73, people began to move less far away from home. At that point, and they began to make shorter moves, and almost everybody in your family stayed local, or am I mistaken?
Half
stayed local.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a very high number, though.
Uh-huh.
I'm the seventh of eight, but one died as an infant,
uh-huh.
and all of us because of the place I was born lost 75% of its population from 1900 to 2000, steadily because of the mechanization of agriculture and the consolidation of land, and so three are in the D.C. area because they rode that kind of public policy, kind of getting at the center of the heart of things. Two are in the Kansas City area, and two are one is in St. Louis, and I'm here in Ithaca.
Uh-huh.
I'm the outlier, as it were,
yeah.
on a whole number of levels. but nobody is within 70. Well, nobody is closer than 70 miles from where we grew up. Because that was kind of our trajectory, but
yeah.
It's interesting, and I've always been interested in your family in part because so many have stayed. So, how you talked about this coming to face mortality and with your hip and your knee and these things, but how have you changed? How has your commitments changed over the years, or how have they become deeper? You described a deepening moment when you were put in that prison cell,
mm-hmm.
Kind of realizing the consequences of something you've already committed to, and that's sometimes we run away from those, but you kind of chose to go more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
But how have things maybe gone the other way? How have you changed or let things go that you thought were important?
How have I changed? That question's not
drawing.
Say
anything.
It. Okay. I actually did want to say back to the thing about living in Ithaca.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I got this image forming that because I was going to say, because I've lived here for so long, I often run into people that I knew when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really value that mm-hmm. experience. And it's the big reason why I stay in Ithaca. And the image that came to me was like, I have roots here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that image speaks to me because I've been a farmer. And so I have roots in that way. And then I love developing roots in growing food.
Right, and we don't we are such a long-lived species, just to be kind of a field biologist for a moment,
uh-huh.
that we don't realize how important it is that people who knew our parents or our grandparents, people who knew us at different points in our life, can help to make sense of things when they seem new to us, and they'll say, "Oh, I remember when you went through that before," or "I know, that's been an issue in your family," and
yes,
how can we be attentive, or how can we? That kind of deep knowledge across the decades. Is incredibly valuable.
It's so valuable, and yeah. So few people have it nowadays, I think.
Right.
What you were speaking to.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the population of Tompkins County has doubled since 1950, and it's the only place in upstate New York where that's happened.
Uh-huh.
And not only has it doubled, but the number of jobs here has tripled, so we get a third of our workforce coming in from out of the county. We are a very, in some sense, transient, and it's hard to form. While we may, you know, we have 70,000 permanent residents here, it's hard for them to get to know each other. We're so isolated. And the multi-generational families who've been here, especially if they're working class, can't afford to live here anymore.
Yeah.
So roots. And for me, that's a sensitive topic for me. Five generations of my ancestors are buried within 6 miles of each other.
Oh, wow.
Since before the Civil War in North Missouri. And uh-huh. And I know what it means to be local.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and people who know you across many, many decades. But that's, and I'm assuming you had the same teachers in school, so you had the kids, your older siblings, setting the reputation for the younger siblings.
A little bit.
Some of that,
not as much.
Yeah, it's a bigger school district. Yeah. I went to a school where there were only 40 students per grade level, so you know, there were two teachers for every elementary grade level,
mm-hmm.
and so you know, you had one of them, and one of them had one of your siblings. That was a guarantee. So I guess let me kind of, what I'm working around to here is, what have you learned that may have forced you to change a deeply held commitment? And this is a tough question. This is the change question in a slightly different way, because many of us as activists want to be like straight arrows, but there are times when we need to kind of reverse course or change direction. And what has that happened to you? And if so, what has it been?
I actually thought about this question, and I don't think that it has happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe around the issue of food, but that's pretty tangential.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So no, but I could take it in a different direction,
sure,
which is
sure.
How what's a part of me that has changed, not necessarily the commitment piece, but just about me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would say is that I'm much more sure of myself, even in the last year, than I was for most of my
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a profound coming home to myself, which mm-hmm. has been a great gift. And I think it's partly due to Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
but also due to this acting class that I'm taking,
mm-hmm.
That's been really, for me, profound and shifting.
What about the acting and the Buddhism practice has kind of brought this sense of, you said sure, and I would say almost confident,
uh-huh.
Confident is hope and trust and not second guessing yourself, but being able to follow through with an action
right.
and see where it goes.
Yeah, I would say the Buddhism has helped me, acceptance is huge in Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
And I've sort of keep trying to have that work on me, like a drop of water working
right.
on me. So I think finally it is starting to get in. And then the acting class is a specific technique, but it has forced me. I'm a strong introvert,
mm-hmm.
and I need time to process what I'm feeling in the mm-hmm. moment, especially with another person, and
mm-hmm.
and that's not usually possible. So the acting has actually forced me to become more of an extrovert and to step into the present moment and be with the other person and figure out how I feel very quickly
mm-hmm.
and relate to them
mm-hmm.
very quickly.
Right. Right. But you also know that in that moment you're performing. And I think that there are lots
no,
of...
No, this kind of acting, you're
okay,
not
right,
actually
right,
performing.
Right. Well, okay. Not in the sense of making a show of things. A lot
right.
of professional actors are introverts. That's one of the
mm-hmm.
what's one of the kind mm-hmm. of not widely known pieces.
Uh-huh,
is that
uh-huh.
It's not the extroverts who are the really good actors, because oftentimes they're not sensitive enough to what's coming back at them to be able to respond and play with it. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
This is the Meisner technique, and their slogan is acting truthfully in imaginary circumstances.
Right.
So.
And yes. That is a classic saying. And when you. So what I want to question now is to frame the question in a slightly different way.
Okay.
How do you know at times, not on the big issues, but maybe on the smaller issues, when you're wrong?
when I'm wrong.
And because that's kind of the Achilles heel of a lot of us who have strong passions, mm-hmm. is being able to just stop and say, oh, shoot, I messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Not doubting ourselves. It's not about self-doubt. It's just about, you know, stopping and starting over again.
I think I'm probably on the other end of the spectrum from you. Uh-huh. I mean, I certainly have strong opinions, mm-hmm. about how our society should be structured, mm-hmm. and about justice and equality. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, myself, I have had a lot of self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very quick to know when I'm wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had a strong inner critic.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is many times the inner critic is oppressive,
yes,
and not correct, and yeah. how to come into terms, and what you're describing is a process by which you're becoming more grounded in, mm-hmm. what is true,
mm-hmm.
and so the inner critic becomes more true,
mm-hmm.
and less distorted, mm-hmm. and so what I'm asking is how does your relationship with that inner critic changing, or is it yet?
Yeah, no, it's definitely changing. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly by being aware of it and naming it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can actually talk back to it and say, you know, go take a break. Thank you for your service, but I don't need you right now.
Right. But when it's correct, you uh-huh. can, what do you do?
About me being wrong?
About your needing to kind of step back. How do you handle that? Have you come to that point with the inner critic yet?
I'm as an introvert, I need time to think about.
We can let that go. But it could be a good time to go back to some music.
Sure.
And you had one from Farron and one from.
Let's do the Pete Seeger.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He's always great.
And this is Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. Oh, shoot. Hang on just a second here. We have a technical glitch that I'm going to have to fix because I wasn't on top of the game. It will be fixed in just one moment. So here we go. We're going to move it back to the beginning, and we're going to start it.
It was back in 1942. I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. All at once the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where he'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
And that was Pete Seeger, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay report, digging deeper into the issues of our lives, is Mary Lehrer. And Mary, Pete Seeger, mm-hmm. Okay, he died recently, and he's a larger-than-life icon in American protest movements for a whole host of reasons. What is your relationship to that song and to him?
I think a lot of people know Pete just stood up for what was right his whole life, even when it was hard. And that song, it just, we are headed in the wrong direction, and we need to question that and turn mm-hmm. around. And I think going back to what I said about trusting my own self more mm-hmm. and more, I think that song speaks to that. And questioning authority, I've never had a problem questioning authority, actually, mm-hmm. but listening to my own voice and acting on it has been trickier. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I think that song speaks to that. And just the insanity of where our so-called leaders are taking us.
Right, right, right. And to not, yeah, to maintain a sense that something different could be done here.
Yes.
And even if it's different, it may not prevent us from tragedy.
Yeah.
But at least we can try.
Yeah.
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 One of the things that I like to ask people about is, what do you do to kind of restore your sense of balance? What do you do kind of on a regular basis, daily or during the day or on a regular basis, you know, over the course of the year? What do you do to restore your optimism and sense of balance? That's often a big challenge for people who live life as activists.
I do a lot of things. I'm actually pretty, I need to do a lot of things in order to keep my sanity. Mm-hmm. I need exercise, and I'm pretty committed. It's not even a chore. Mm-hmm. I know that I need to have exercise in order to keep a positive outlook on life.
What do you do?
Well, I used to run and bike. Now I can't do those things anymore. Mm-hmm. I swim mostly. Mm-hmm. Also, just being outside is great, but being outside working with plants is even better. So I've been a farmer for many years, and growing food and flowers mm-hmm. Definitely keeps me grounded.
Right.
I also meditate in the mornings. Every morning I meditate, and then once a year, I go on a silent retreat, mm-hmm. a Buddhist silent retreat for between 5 and 10 days. Uh-huh. And that really restores me. And then now I hope to go twice a year, actually.
Yeah. So so it's a mix of physical activity, kind of emotional connection around the earth, and mm-hmm. And also kind of clearing the mind. Mm-hmm. Every morning is first thing you do, or do you?
Yes, first thing I do.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And people that I've interviewed tend to about a third to half have a daily practice that's uh-huh. like that they are very much, it structures their life. And others resist that kind of routine, mm-hmm. and about half to two-thirds say, I'm sensitive to it when it needs to happen. When are you sensitive to needing to do something more than your daily routine?
When am I sensitive to needing to do more than my
daily
routine?
Right.
Meaning,
when do you schedule your 5-day retreat, or how do you is it a particular time of year every year, or do you sense I need to go away now?
I kind of, it's so regular now. I mean, it's usually in March only, and that was because when I was a farmer, that was like the best
right.
time, or February. But I haven't been a farmer for a few years, but I've somehow stuck with that habit. And mm-hmm. I usually, yeah, I schedule it like in November, actually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And how have you found it? You said you talked about the seeing people who've known you from when you were a child and having people kind of come back to you over those years. Have you metamorphosed over those years, or have you kind of pretty much just become more clearly who you were to begin with? And how what I'm getting at is many communities, and this is true of religious organizations especially, but also any kind of social or cultural group, have a hard time allowing people to profoundly change mm-hmm. across the life cycle. Mm-hmm. And we get stuck. Mm-hmm. Have you managed avoiding getting stuck, or are you sensitive to that, or has it been an issue?
You know, it's hard to... So when I was 18, I went to college in Nebraska. I followed my best friend from high school out there. And I copied her in a lot of ways. And she was in ROTC, so mm-hmm. I was in ROTC. Mm-hmm. This was... And then she was in a sorority, and I was in a sorority. So... And then I didn't want to be at that school anymore, and I came back to Ithaca, and I actually went to Cornell, and that's when I met people that I fell in with, peace activists, and mm-hmm. changed. So since then, I wouldn't say that I've changed in major ways. Mm-hmm.
But the people who knew you as a child yes. would have known a different sort of Mary.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Although I think that what I said a little while ago about listening to my inner voice is the way that I've changed or stayed the same. I'm not sure which it is, but
if your inner voice was always telling you something, but you were overriding it because yes. of doubt, then you've had it with you, but you haven't honored it.
Yes. And so I think I think that even though I was in ROTC, which mm-hmm. I completely value, mm-hmm. that I did that, even though I've been a peace activist for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I think that was because I was so young, I was not knowing how to listen to myself and mm-hmm. what I actually wanted.
And oftentimes, I think it helps kids to grow up if they have a strong structure to react to. And any, you know, it's... To me, it's generally more effective than having not much structure at all or nobody to really push back. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of, if it's not abusive, it forces us to kind of grow up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. I think I've just been continuing to explore mm-hmm. all these years and exploring different politically, not hugely politically, but exploring what other people are experiencing. So I've been very involved with the Worker Center, for example, and I went and worked at Walmart because I wanted to know mm-hmm, mm-hmm. what it was like for the people that worked at Walmart. And right. then similarly, I went and worked at the Ramada Inn as a housekeeper, cleaning mm-hmm, rooms. Mm-hmm. So I think those weren't exactly changes on my part, but I was exploring what it means to be here on this planet as a human being and what other people are going through.
Right. Right, and your life, the way you shape your life is your vocation. And one of the neat things about the Catholic worker movement is that there are a lot of people that are doing those kinds of experiential learning. I mean, that's if you want to put a fancy word on it, but it really is a way of trying to get into other people's shoes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, from people who have a more rigid sense of what success is about, doesn't necessarily seem like success.
That's right, for sure.
But from the point of view of people who are knowledgeable and about other human beings, it is the only way to really learn. And mm-hmm. and that's kind of a dilemma that we live in, because when we want to become really good at something, we usually can't take on other things. We're not free or available to people whose circumstances are very different from our own, because we're already invested in a style of life that doesn't let us let us make those connections.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that partly we can hear stories like yours that will allow us to at least be open to others. And especially since so many of the people who work at places like Walmart or the Ramada come in from out of the county.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford to live here.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are the best jobs around, actually.
That was my experience at Walmart, that a vast majority of people came in, mostly from like Vanetten, all the way down there.
And all the way down to Elmira,
I think.
But yep. Actually, when you get into Lowe's and Home Depot, you'll get pulling further away. Their wages are a bit higher, and the skill required is a bit higher.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go to something quiet music-wise.
Okay.
What would you like to turn to?
We could do the Farron song.
Okay. And I never was to Africa. Do you want to speak to this now or later?
Farron is a great songwriter. If people don't know her, I highly recommend checking her out. And this is a song, I've listened to her music for many, many years. And I picked this one from the heart also, not from the head.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting where the rushes grow, or you catch a red rose bloom, or if you're ever standing where a raging river flows and you feel yourself a lonesome tune, that's right, it's me again, right by your side. And you can yell out through the wind, she's mine, and while the wind might wail, it will not cry. It'll say she always was, and so am I. I never was to Africa, though it comes up in my dreams, and we never got our hearts in tune. If time is what it seems, but maybe when you're with someone who you understand and you tell them I love you, well, maybe I'll be with someone and I'll take their hand and I'll say I love you too. Catch a red rose bloom, or if I'm ever standing where a raging river flows and I feel myself a lonesome tune, I'll know it's you again, right by my side. And I'll yell out through the wind, she's mine, and while the wind might wail, it will not cry. It'll say she always was, so am I.
And that was Farron, I Never Was to Africa. And our guest for this hour is Mary Lehr. So Mary, how did you, You have been with the Catholic worker movement now for 30 years?
25.
Yeah, probably introduced to it before you really became part of it.
Yes, exactly.
What was that like to become part of the Catholic worker movement? What were you joining to, and what is the Catholic worker movement?
The Catholic worker movement is an anarchical group of people. So it's nothing to do with the official Catholic Church.
Right, right.
Say that off the bat.
Right, right.
And it's started in the 1930s by Dorothy Day and Peter Morin in New York City.
On Staten Island.
And she had been a socialist before, or perhaps a communist, before she had her conversion to Catholicism. So she had the left, quote-unquote, left politics already. Mm-hmm. And Peter Morin was a French peasant who came from also, I say this in quotes, a radical background in France. They wanted to feed the homeless people and shelter them. And they also wanted to look at the roots of why people are homeless, why people are going to jail, why people are hungry. So it's both. And there's no headquarters.
Right.
And if a group of people wants to start a Catholic worker house, they can do it. And so it does come with an anarchist leaning in the sense that we just do what needs to be done. And if people need shelter, that's what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you want to comment on
that? I want to go back a little bit. Because
uh-huh.
I think the term... anarchy is so badly misunderstood,
yes.
and every once in a while on the show I do a riff on anarchy. I don't know if you listened to any of them in the past, but anarchy is not the absence of order; it's the absence of centralized authority dictating order, and that's the way in which the Catholic worker movement is completely at odds. It's with the formal Roman Catholic Church, but there's always been a tension in all of the imagery, the biblical imagery, the theological imagery between the priesthood of all believers, or the equality of all persons, and any kind of centralized objective or just crony authority or legitimate authority, however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Anarchy is the absence of a head, a single head, and monarchy is one head, and mm-hmm. oligarchy are multiple mm-hmm. heads. And, mm-hmm. and we need to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about governance that works from an anarchic point of view is that people do what matters, and if they don't do it, it doesn't matter to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a minimal prohibition against taking on an issue that you care about. You don't have to have your community's support, which is a powerful. In a way, it's almost surprising that it's taken as many years for you to find that inner voice, because that inner voice is the heart of anarchy. It's the
mm-hmm.
heart of following, and also looking for what the impact of your actions are, so that you don't just act on the world, but you discover as you do it. Now stop.
mm-hmm.
So, but no, it's a powerful perspective.
Yeah, and Peter Morin, and they talked about the dignity of work, and mm-hmm. Peter Morin had a whole thing about agriculture, which has not been implemented as much. So there are Catholic worker communities all over the United States and all over the world, but mm-hmm. many of them have farms, but not mm-hmm. all of them. So we have a Catholic worker house here in Ithaca. And what else was I going to say? I forgot.
Well, some more. Was there anything more about the philosophy,
or
the way you function as a group?
Looking at the root, because the word radical means root.
Right.
So what is the root? Why do we have poverty? Why are people homeless? Why are people losing their jobs? Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, if everyone came out and offered what they could offer,
mm-hmm.
a house, food, whatever,
right.
to people that needed it,
right.
and on the other hand, addressing the structural injustices of why these things exist in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah, the Catholic workers have been a huge influence on my life.
And one of my friends who is on the, maybe part of the group around the circle of Catholic workers, his comment always with a grin on his face is, the truth about the Catholic workers is that they don't.
Yes. yeah, we have a song about that. Yeah.
And the point is, work is not just about paid labor. Mm-hmm. Work is about what we use our time for, because in the end, what levels us all is that we, the only thing we have is time, and not the same amount of time either. But what we have is our time. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to waste my time doing something that I don't need to be doing, or if I'm going to waste your time, we are throwing away the treasure. And learning about other people and making the world a better place and taking responsibility for it is all stewarding our time to the best of our abilities. And that is a powerful message, because it's not monetized. Mm-hmm. So little of our lives, less than a third of our lives, time is monetized. Yet we act as though it all were. Mm-hmm. And that's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a rich conversation.
So what would you like to close out our time with today in terms of music?
Let's see. We
Mama Don't Allow No Hide No Fracking was an option.
Yes, and, or the Richie. And, we can only pick one.
We might be part of two.
Let's play Colleen's. Okay. So this is I picked this song because Colleen is brilliant, and even though hydrofracking is such a intense issue, she manages to make us dance about it.
Yeah, and if we can't dance about the things we care about, we probably can't fight more aggressively either.
Mm-hmm.
Mama don't allow no hydrofracking around here. Mama don't allow no hydrofracking around here. We don't care what the company said now. Don't want no hydrofracking anyhow. Mama don't allow no hydrofracking around here. No, mama don't allow no heavy truck traffic around here. Mama don't allow no heavy truck traffic around here. We don't care what the company says now. Don't want no heavy truck, no way, no how. Mama don't allow no heavy truck traffic around here. No, mama don't allow no wasted water around here. Mama don't allow no wasted water around here. We don't care what the company says now. Don't want no wasted water anyhow. Mama don't allow no wasted water around here. Need some guitar around here. Well, your daddy don't allow no dirty business around here. My mama don't allow no faucets on fire around here. We don't care what the company says now. Don't want no hydrofracking, no way, no how. Mama don't allow no hydrofracking around here.
Colleen Katow, I'm pronouncing it right?
I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah. But Mama don't allow no hydrofracking around here. Mary, what thoughts would you like to leave us with this morning?
I would like people to think that we all make a difference. We can all make a difference. Mm-hmm. And in order to work on changing things, we need community around us. We need people around us. And we also need to work on inner change simultaneously mm-hmm. with outer change. So I know some activists that are very angry and don't look at themselves, and vice versa.
Yeah. No, it's there is no place to walk without reflection. Yeah.
But we have a lot of role models. It helps me a lot to look at other people mm-hmm. that have, mm-hmm. I read a lot of biographies of people that have worked on change, Pete Seeger being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And well, Mary, it has been wonderful to get to know
you
a little bit.
Yes, thank you
so
much.
And we're gonna close out the hour with a tune, "If I Needed You," performed by Richie Stearns and Rosie Newton. It's a Townes Van Zandt song.
If I needed you, would you come to me? Would you come to me and ease my pain? If you needed me, I would.
If I needed you.